From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Well, you probably first heard here the suggestion that a Trump presidency may actually be good for world peace. That suggestion, perhaps crazy idea when first uttered, was brought to us by Professor Tony Montero. However, lately, it seems others are starting to come around, among them Chris Hedges, who in a recent interview with TV Ontario asked, "Are we witnessing the collapse of the American empire?" And more to the point, an article earlier this month at the website truthdig.com, where Gareth Porter asks, "Could Trump take down the American empire?" The latter of those two pieces draws heavily on Bob Woodward's book, Fear, Trump in the White House. For more on that, we decided to speak with Professor Montero via Skype from Philadelphia Thursday. Well, Tony, let's see. It seems the world is beginning to catch up with you. You got Chris Hedges and Gareth Porter both asking questions, basically centering on the piece Gareth Porter had in Truth Dig October 2nd, Could Trump Take Down the American Empire? That's the title of that one. And then we've got Chris Hedges, Are We Witnessing the Collapse of the American Empire? You know, you've been saying from the get-go, really, that Trump appears to represent this entire, maybe a pilot for that collapse, if not the architect of it, perhaps sort of a hybrid role in those two things. What do you think, first of all, about... Nobody's mentioned your name in these articles, by the way, and I don't know, are you getting royalty checks or what?
Well, you know, I like to think that, you know, we're all belatedly coming to the same position because, you know, liberal progressives like Chris Hedges and Gareth Porter in 2016, and I would imagine most of 2017, were trumpeting the hysterical thing of Trump is a fascist, Trump represents the end of democracy and all of that type of thing. But I think with Gareth Porter, his article in Truth Dig is an investigation and almost a review of Bob Woodward's book called Fear, the book on the Trump White House. And he has dug into it and saw what was its central core, central concern, and that is Trump's position in foreign policy. And what Woodward shows is what I think you and I have been discussing for over 2 years now, well over 2 years, about 2.5 years to be more accurate, right, is that whether Trump saw what many people, even those among the neoliberals and Democrats, saw, that the American empire was too expensive, and that as a consequence of this military empire and this imperial overreach, the United States would fall behind the Asian economic superpowers, in particular China and India, that the United States could not be both a economic superpower, especially with the Asian giants, and a military empire at the same time. And I think Trump understood this. And if you listen closely, that is precisely what he is saying when he talks about peace on the Korean Peninsula, pull back from NATO, no intervention, and so on. Of course, that's him speaking, and I think that doesn't mean that everybody or most people in his administration are saying the same thing. I mean, with Chris Hedges, of course, he sees a doomsday scenario scenario. And it's quite interesting that for him, the collapse of the American empire is nothing to be celebrated. For us, it is a necessary stage opening up the door to the transition to a world democratic system, an international democratic system, both politically and economically among nations, but also a necessary stage if there is to be genuine people's democracy in this country and what I would hope for, a socialist redoing of the economy. The American empire has to be ended. It is not a dark day. It is an inevitable moment. And if we can educate the people, the outcomes of this could be very, very positive and bright, if not in the short run, at least in the medium and long run.
You know, if that process is going to occur, which is inevitable, really.
Yes.
And if the possibility of it occurring is now, well, you have someone at the helm, in terms of being at the helm, I'm talking about Commander-in-Chief, specifically, of the U.S. military, mm-hmm. who says, let's not use that because it's expensive and it doesn't really ever do what we want at the end of the day. Isn't that a better condition for us and for everybody else within the sights of those guns than having someone else? In other words, having somebody that says we shouldn't be fighting wars because it's too expensive, as opposed to somebody saying, what do you think we got the military for? We're going to use it whenever we want.
Absolutely. In other words, to put it another way, was the outcome of the 2016 election a good outcome given the opposition to Trump was Hillary Clinton? Mm-hmm. And you would have to say that that Hillary Clinton would have been a worse president, a war presidency, the opposite of what Trump is. Now, the way the deep state, and I think that's an accurate concept, just like I think the concept military-industrial complex is an accurate description.
For sure.
The majority of the deep state, the vast majority, it would seem, are opposed to Trump, and they're trying to get him out of there and, in a sense, have a redoing of the 2016 election in such a way as to say Trump was an aberration, the normal pattern of the transfer of political power, even if it's from Democrat to Republican or Republican to Democrat, cannot change the strategic position of U.S. imperialism in the world. Trump's victory was, in effect, saying that all of those assumptions and all of those practices that we have become, and I'm being a bit ironic, we have become accustomed to over the last 70 years have to be redone. That is his fundamental instinct. It is his basic worldview in international politics. Now, he's being pilloried. He's being presented as what he is not. I would say that he is a political maneuverer, which he'd have to be. He ran as a Republican, albeit one who attacked every major Republican insider that he ran against.
Yep.
He literally decimated the Republican establishment in order to win the nomination and then the election.
Right.
It was an extraordinary feat.
That's right.
But he cannot govern without the support of Republicans, given
right.
the ferocity of the Democratic attack upon him.
Right.
And this gets to the Brett Kavanaugh, who was a centrist, who's not a right winger. I don't think is concerned with overturning Roe v. Wade. I don't think it will be overturned. But more important than gender politics or the other issues that are important to certain constituencies, in particular the petty bourgeoisie, that become the center of the base, the real base that they're trying to make for the Democratic Party. Irrespective of all of that, when you look at the question of peace, the question of detente with Russia, the question of peace and demilitarization of the Korean Peninsula, the question of non-intervention. Well, people say, well, what about Iran? Yes, we. And what about Saudi Arabia? I mean, these are questions on the table. But at the same time, we cannot overlook the overriding question, which is war and peace.
Right.
That along with the question of the climate and climatic warming are the two issues that could end the human species, right, as well as other species on this planet. So yeah, if the Trump presidency can bring us closer to a general peace in the world, or as Chris Hedges and Gareth Porter put it, the end of American empire. Could Trump be that presidency? And I think with you and myself, we are betting on the fact that he can be that presidency.
Right. And again, it seems like the need for.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, go ahead.
No. And it seems like, as you said, that he sees the need for it as an expense. You know, looking at the ledger sheet.
Yes. And so, I mean, but does that solve all the problems? I mean,
no.
You know, I think as we have said, if there is a left that's worth anything, it would support him where it can, albeit critically, criticize him and condemn him where we must.
Right.
I mean, that's politics. Yeah. And in the process, build up the mass base for a politic that goes beyond Trump.
That's
but
right.
At this moment, to join with the neoliberal deep state and others who are committed to fortifying and building up American empire,
right,
we must do the opposite. To march in the Women's March, or to be a part of this Me Too movement at this time, which is really not about women's freedom, because it is not addressing the problems of the working class and poor women. They never have. To join with that against Trump is really to join with the deep state in effect.
Yep. You know, if you wanted to talk about women's rights in the public sphere, and if you wanted to do action after action after action and move towards shutting everything down to make people listen to you, why is it that you would choose a Supreme Court nomination instead of, say, unequal pay? Like today, like waking up today and saying, I'm going to go do that. The reason is because people were organized into it, and they, you know, this is this AstroTurf kind of organizing.
Mm-hmm.
You've got media plugins, whether social, television, whatever, that have data on everyone. They know that, you know, the extent, for example, within an order of magnitude of people being sexually abused in the country, that have, you know, anger over it, latent anger, you know, submerged anger, whatever, feelings that can be manipulated. And so those people are being, all of us, I mean, they've got us all like micro, where they can microcast to us. And you see everybody that is able to be moved is moved right now into the public sphere to hate each other rather than the source of oppression. The Fox Channel directs people to hate people on MSNBC. MSNBC is directing them to hate people on Fox. They're all working class people, most of them.
Well, I would suggest that a good part of the working class are not listening to either.
Yep, that's true.
Station, and there was an interesting article, op-ed piece in the Financial Times by Lawrence Summers, former president of Harvard, former economic advisor to Obama, and I guess other presidents. He said that he and his wife drove from Chicago to San Francisco, and they took the back roads, the small highways and stuff, and they saw America that was different than coastal America. And they don't pretty much look at the news. They mainly listen to radio, and they're people who, as communities, deal with their problems, and they make judgments upon what is in their interest, but they're not guided by a lot of what goes on in the mass media. They don't trust it. Right. I think polls show over and over again that the majority of American people do not trust the corporate media.
Right.
And certainly if you get to young people, they really don't trust it, nor do they trust the Congress or Wall Street or the banks. I mean, we're in a crisis of legitimacy. Right. And you're right, these invented and manufactured movements and who was behind them. I mean, most of them are these demonstrations are organized by people who are parts of NGOs and right. and that are funded by various sources that have a vested interest, I would say, in the neoliberal global order and as such in the U.S. empire, U.S. Right. imperialism. So I think it's already tainted. It is already a bias in the direction of the old order. I think it was Gareth Porter in his article said that Trump is taking a wrecking ball to the old order and really to the two-party system as we know it. This is not a bad thing.
Right.
And the central question for the American people are centered at the level of the class struggle, the class issues of jobs, of wages that have not risen over the last decade. Again, I'm always referring to Philadelphia. A study came out recently that showed that while poverty, at least officially, was declining in most of the country in 2016 and 2017, it rose in Philadelphia. And Philadelphia is the third, ranked the third major city in the country in terms of inequality. It is a grotesque thing to see up close, and I see it up close because I live here, this shining downtown and these growing and expanding and gentrifying universities, but yet the majority of people are growing poorer,
right.
And deep poverty, and children are hungrier. I say that to say that the Me Too movement is a diversion from the fundamental questions of the well-being of the people. And the well-being of the people cannot occur without a pullback from this overly expensive and poisonous and destructive military empire. And that's why I said that Trump represents imperial retreat. Now, the question is whether or not the American people can mobilize themselves to then say, with the retreat, we want a drastic cut in the military budget.
Right.
We want a real detente with Russia. We want a pullback, but an investment in building the infrastructure of this country. So, I mean,
Yep. I'm looking at this piece in Truthdig. Could Trump take down the American empire? this Gareth Porter's piece. There's like one little narrative in the middle of it that really gets to the core, and I think the value of citing it is that he's actually cribbing from Woodward's book. So this isn't Gareth Porter telling, you know, narrating, but rather Robert Woodward. And it's about a meeting that Mathis, Tillerson, and others had in July of 2017.
I think you're talking about Mathis.
Mathis. Yeah, I said Mathis. Yeah, Mathis. And at the meeting, Mathis is talking in neoliberal, neocon terms, really, the empire, the globalism, rules-based international democratic order had brought prosperity and security. And Tillerson says this is what's kept the peace for 70 years. So it says Trump said nothing, according to Woodward's account, but simply shook his head in disagreement and eventually steered the discussion to an issue he was particularly interested in, South Korea. He said, we spend $3.5 billion a year to have troops in South Korea. I don't know why they're there. Let's bring them all home. At that point, Reince Priebus, who was Trump's chief of staff at the time, he's the guy that was before that the head of the RNC. He's, one of the institutional boys. Mm-hmm. Recognizing that this team's effort to get control of Trump was a failure, called a halt to the meeting. And that the following month, even as Trump was threatening in tweets to destroy, now to me this just tells the picture for people who need to understand this, as he threatened in tweets to destroy North Korea, he was privately hammering aides over the U.S. troop presence in South Korea and repeatedly expressing a determination to remove them. This is according to Bob Woodward. So, I mean, what more do you have to say about that? All these people, when you try to tell them, look, maybe there's some advantages here for the peace movement, let's work this, they look at you like you're from Mars.
Right, right. Well, because they don't proceed from empirical evidence, they proceed from already existing biases, prejudices, and assumptions. They don't like the aesthetics of the Trump White House or the Trump presidency. Right. So they're going, they make judgments based upon their sense of what the president should act like or what he should say. The fact of the matter is that also Woodward quotes from one of those meetings, which Trump said, we've spent $6 trillion on these wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. And he said, I can't even get $1 trillion to rebuild the infrastructure of this country. At another point, Woodward quotes from that meeting, or a leak from that meeting, that Trump said, look, why don't we just pull out of Afghanistan and declare victory? We can't win there. He is talking about, and I say it over and over again, imperial retreat, which in this context makes him a peace president.
Right.
More than any since John F. Kennedy.
Right. And hopefully with a different outcome. And,
when
you're talking absolutely. About the aesthetics, let's use the language of Marx, Engels, Lenin, et cetera. We're talking about, or even Hegel, we're talking about appearance versus essence, okay? If you're going to talk, the word today for aesthetics is optics. But what it is illusion. That's essentially what it is, as opposed to what really is going on. And we are supposed to confront the world that is, not the one we like. If this one is ugly, too bad. You can't ask them for the pretty one and then have to engage the ugly, because the ugly is what's there, and that's what you have to deal with. And
absolutely.
If you want to deal with it, then you got to deal with it as it is.
And Don, and we want to know the world. We want to understand the world in order to change it.
Right.
If you do not understand it, then you can always be anger and enraged. And in this environment, that's part of what politics is. But we who have a different responsibility to humanity must understand what's going on in order to change what is to something better. When Gareth Porter talks about Trump taking a wrecking ball to the principal institutions of American imperialism, starting with the media, the propaganda arm of the financial oligarchs, this is profoundly important, profoundly significant, you know, and that's what we have to look at.
Yep.
I am appalled, frankly, but I guess I should not be surprised at how gullible the what goes for the American left is in this situation, how easily they follow the ideological lead of the corporate media, which is, of course, a combination of the deep state and Wall Street imperial interests. I mean, how gullible they are. I mean, and again, you know, the labor movement has been very, very pragmatic with regards to Trump, especially on the trade deals, especially the industrial unions.
Right.
The pullback from TPP was not a bad thing.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
That's right.
So, yeah.
And growth in the steel industry, which is real.
Yeah.
You know, it's real. That actually is a real thing. And there are other areas.
But that
the real
growth
economy.
Cannot be sustained
right.
unless there is trillions of dollars, not $1 trillion, but multiple trillions of dollars invested in infrastructure.
Right.
We need a New Deal kind of economic policy on steroids.
Right. Without the incentive of World War II.
And here's where I criticize Trump's monetarist almost supply-side economic policies. You see, and here Christine Lagarde of the IMF is absolutely right about this. Tax cuts of the magnitude that the Republicans and Trump passed may give the economy a quick fix, but it is not sustainable because it increases the federal debt. I mean, it's a risk. I feel that in economic policy, Trump is throwing Hail Mary passes. And maybe that's the best he can do in the political environment where the Republicans control both houses and the Democrats don't have a serious economic policy. 10 years of economic stagnation, 10 years of no rise of wages. Yeah. For working people,
right.
10 years of people dropping out of the labor force. How do you reverse that? Not with tax cuts. The only way is massive government spending to employ people and put money in the pockets of the working class and lower middle classes. That's the only answer. History proves that. Keynes was right. Milton Friedman is wrong. What else can you say? You read the Financial Times and the Wall Street Journal as I do, and we might be heading in to another financial collapse. The only difference between this one, I think, that's coming up and the one of 2008, this one will begin as sovereign debt crisis in the emerging markets like Argentina and Turkey and other places, whereas the 2007-2008 one began as a financial crisis beginning in the advanced capitalist countries.
Tony, thank you so much for your time and your insight. And let me know if the royalty checks start coming in.
Yeah, I shall, man. You'll be the first to know.
Thanks a lot. Take care.
Thank you.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.